Hi there. Thanks for downloading and listening to this Speak Free Radio podcast. All the shows are free to download and stream, and always will be. If you get value from them and would like to sponsor the station with a donation, we'd appreciate your help as part of our end-of-year donation drive. Just go over to speakfreeradio.com and click the Donate button on the top right of the website. Thanks for your help, and now, time for the show.
Platform.
BATF IRS CIA and FBI FDA and FCC ADL and KGB. Now I know my ABCs, all of which spell tyranny.
Good morning. Good afternoon to listeners in the UK and Europe. Welcome to the show. This is Bloodlines without Pastor Eli. He's on walkabout. I don't know quite what I mean by that. In fact, he did mention something, didn't he, at the end of last week's show to say that he wouldn't be here for whatever reason. So I've just used the phrase walkabout to kind of cover it because I don't know exactly what he's doing. But I'm joined here today. I'm filling in for Eli. Not really. No one can fill in for Eli. This is a covering crew, and it won't be a normal kind of Bloodlines show in the sense that we've not really decided. I spoke to Michael earlier in the week, and we thought maybe we'd just do a bit of a sort of a history lesson here as to how he and I, and possibly you, got involved in this field of, let's call it this field of knowledge, of truth. And so I'm just going to add Michael to the show now. Michael, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Paul. Thank you very much for the invitation and that you will be the one hosting the show together with me. So that's very good.
Well, not
so
really. You're the host. You're the host. I'm the interloper here. This is really your show. I'm just sort of running the technical side at this part of the whole thing. We talked, didn't we, a few days ago to get things rolling, and here we are ready to go. And I was just telling Michael before the show, I'm normally very well prepped for these things, but I've had a domestic little doo-ha happen about 20 minutes ago, which has taken some of my attention. So I'm literally going to exit for about 2 minutes. Michael's going to hold the fort, and then I'll rejoin for the rest of the show. But I've got to just go and tidy a little thing up, which is not worth me going into the details of. Okay. So I'll be back here, Michael, in a couple of minutes to join you. You hold fort in your inimitable Swedish way. I'll be back real soon. Okay?
Thank you very much, Paul. I can do some introduction to what me and Paul has planned for today. And as he said, we are going to discuss how did we end up with this message that to our knowledge is the truth of the Bible, because that is the foundation of the Bloodline show, and it's also in the name Bloodlines, and that name is testifying about the importance of the Bloodlines, and that is really what the Bible is all about. It is about our DNA. It is about our people, our bloodlines from Adam and Eve through all the patriarchs and also then to Jesus Christ, Yeshua Messiah, until today's European people that you find in the Western Europe, in Eastern Europe as well. The Russian is our brothers and sisters, the Ukrainians as well. And then we have in America, we have us in New Zealand, in Australia, South Africa. So we are all over the world as brothers and sisters in arms in this content that we are facing, because we are witnessing the final hours, final parts, what do you say, of the Bible is fulfilled right now. And there are, we see all around us, people are waking up. But and that is a very positive thing, that they are starting to waking up. They're seeing there is a problem in the system. But some of the more of the more, what do you say, challenging part in this is that they are hitting the branches. They don't hitting on the root of the problem. And that is why I would say the humblest way why we are here, because I believe in my heart that we are hitting at the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is well known for us. It is the Jewish problem, the Jewish question that so few today are speaking about, but that is the root of the problem. Otherwise, they speak about the banks, they speaking about the corporations, they speak about abortion, they speaking about child trafficking and pedophilia. But what is the root to all this? This is the sons of Cain, sons and daughters of Cain's work, of the Canaanite Edomite that today is forming the Jewish people. And those are the root of the problem. We can speak about vaccines. We can speak about a number of things, but why we don't address the root of the problem?
Michael, I'm back.
Great. So I've done a little introduction why I think we are here and what we are doing and what we are serving here, as a bit of an introduction to why I think this is so important message that we are speaking about, this truth of the Bible, this message that we ought to be true in the Bible, that so few can really swallow, can really handle, because it is a tough pill to swallow, and it doesn't go down easily for people. This is hard work for many people to realize that this how the world is, and that the world is not just love. No, it's not love. When Satan's kids is trying to eradicate you, that is not love.
No, it's not. It's, you know, the show that was on before us on Speak Free Radio runs for 4 hours, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of England, and the third hour, the guest on was beginning to touch upon the Bible. It's quite interesting, actually, that here I am today, and I was also listening to that a little bit earlier. Not really from the deeply analytical perspective, probably, that's presented here, but someone just brushing up against it and saying, maybe we ought to sort of look into this, and do we have anybody who understands what the Torah is? And the word Talmud didn't come up, this kind of stuff, and what the Tanakh is, and so on and so forth. And I always have a little shiver when I hear things like that. I don't know about you, because I think that people that are about to go off on that little journey, if they are about to set off on one, the one of inquiry into what Scripture is actually about, are probably armed with the wrong context from the beginning. And are going to get it wrong. And I've just realized there's a helicopter flying by, and it's probably going to add audio atmosphere here. Let me just go and I'm in such a mess today. Hang on. Just hold on. I'll be 10 seconds, if that.
Yeah, and that is, as Paul is alluding to, this is trying to, and that the Bible, and if you, for one of the misconceptions many people do is when they read the Old Testament and they think, oh, no, but that's the God of the Old Testament, and he is evil. He wants to kill those poor Edomite Jewish tribes. Yes, that was the order that we didn't obey. So then there will be pricks in our eyes and thorns in our side. Haven't that come true today?
Yeah. The interesting thing about these comments were that they were just saying, well, we're not really qualified to look at it, which I actually thought was quite encouraging. Because I know people who have sat down and read the Bible from front to back and come out with, from our perspective, which is the true one, of course, but I don't try and hammer it home in that way because it's not very effective. But from that perspective, because they've got the context wrong, all the content that they've just absorbed is totally messed up in their heads. And they come away with these incredibly strong, powerful judgments about the God of the Old Testament being so evil. That's one of the ones that comes up so often, much to my surprise, of course, because Eli often refers to it, rightly, as brutal times back then. They were brutal. They're getting pretty brutal now, actually. You can see how it's creeping towards that kind of madness again. But it's this thing about context and the absence of it. It makes the book actually very dangerous, because really the history of organized religions, not all the time, of course, there have always been people, I think, up and down the line of the organized religions who have fully understood the racial nature of the contract that the document is about. But they've always been in the minority or have been a subdued voice to some degree or have been classed as troublemakers. Probably like you, Michael, you're probably nothing but a troublemaker. And me too, you know, and you have to sit there and absorb all this stuff. I've sat down in conversation with people that do talk about the Bible from time to time, and I don't know quite where to butt in because practically everything they're saying is incorrect. So you come, you go, look, I'm sorry, just to pull you up, but you've got it all wrong. This is all wrong. And I could hear the beginnings of that, really, in this conversation today, of going wrong, which sounds awfully smug for people in our position, which is not effective. Or you come across as patronizing. And yet, again and again and again, for me, I keep getting drawn back. I just try to hold people personally, or when I'm starting off, on this word testament, that it is a contract. And that from that, did you know that, you know, kind of stuff, without trying to make them wrong, because it's very difficult. But the truth is that most people don't view it as a contract. They don't see it as that. They see it in the light that you were just painting a few minutes ago, that this is about salvation and happiness and Jesus loves everyone and all that kind of stuff. And we don't really want to read the Old Testament because it's full of all this evil, horrible stuff and all this warfare. Yes, yes. But without which, of course, the New Testament makes no sense. And so it does develop pretty much into a big conversation. I don't know if you've found that, if you're ever involved in conversations like that.
Yes, I also finding the same kind of conversation. And when I spoken to Swedish people about the Bible, often they speak about Paul and they speak about the New Testament. And they also have a misconception about the word Jew. And I also show mm-hmm. them where what the word mean, Iodines, but that doesn't really, they don't want to hear it, so they don't take it to heart really. And I can also speak to other that has the same as you say, oh, the Old Testament, that is so evil, that is written by an evil God, that is so evil, no, I don't read that. But wait, how can you understand a book if you don't read the whole book from beginning to end? Because using Old and New Testament, I think, is a bit could also be very misleading. It is the whole book that is you should read in one context, not just yes. one part of it. Don't you get the wrong conclusion if you read the book in only half of it?
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, we were talking a few days before about how we would kind of play out today, and I was mentioning to you or suggesting that maybe something for us to cover a little bit is how you, and maybe how I, although I've said it a few times, but how you came into this field of knowledge. Why are you here, Michael, in this call today? Why are we doing this show? What brought us to this point? And also the listeners and the people in the Eurofolk Radio chat room. By the way, just by way of a bit of house cleaning, this show's going out live on speakfreeradio.com and also going out live on its traditional and long-standing home ground of eurofolkradio.com. Just to let everybody know. And I'm just checking the chat, Michael, just to make sure that everybody's hearing it. Had no moans or anything this week. So I think technically we've got most of our doodads in a row. But just coming back to that question, how did you get here into this show today? What's the line that brought you to this field of knowledge? I'm personally interested to know, actually, because I don't know much about it from your perspective.
Yeah, that's an history of its own. I think all people have their own way to finding this truth. And for me, as I start up, where did all this start? Probably when I was done with my studying in universities, I thought, do I know everything now? And then, of course, no, you don't know anything when you have studied universities. And that was also a wake up call for me. But then my first quest for truth has always been, not always, that started on the health side, because that was the first, field that I was starting to to research, and I found out that everything they say about our foods and what is good and bad is the opposite. Is there anything more that is like this? And then it starts to unwrangle, and you also face this, that our modern, democratic system is the same. It's a demonic system. It's not supposed to be like this. This is it's just a cover for dictatorship. And you think you have something to say, and you think you have rights and freedom. Well, you don't. You live in a dictatorship. And that was also a bit of bitter pillow to swallow. Because I've also, in my youth, I was a bit more, when I was younger, I was a bit naive and thought you can change stuff in politics. I tried to do it, but no, that was not the way, because you get ostracized and you get, you end up on some notorious communist newspaper. And that was my experience with that.
Did you? Did you end up in a notorious communist newspaper? I'm very interested in that. So you really were very, very naughty. This is tremendous.
So I have very immense interest in history. That has been one of my also very keen interests. And then, of course, you will get faced with that most of our history today that is taught is utter lies. It is the word, as I said, his story. And who is his in this case? It is the Jewish story, of course. So if you read history about World War II, you will end up with a Jewish perception of World War II. And then that is, of course, false. It is the most false you can find. So that was also a bit of a pillow to swallow, to realize that the Jews were not so persecuted. They were the one that started the war, and Hitler just wanted peace. So that was also a big... So all this...
How old are you at this time? At this time, you're just after your communist newspaper debacle and everything. How old were you then?
Now I'm 39. So then I was probably 34, 33, something like this, I would say.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I used to be 39. It was quite nice. I bet many of the listeners used to be 39 too. You probably just made half of them get quite envious, but that's really tremendous. Yeah. So in your 30s, this began to build up, yes?
Yeah, it did. It did. And that's always when I'm speaking, for example, my... if you come to my ex-girlfriend, her parents always said to me that you're looking for something, you're always searching for something, you never settled. No, I'm not. I'm always this outcast, I would say, because I'm very genuine in what I'm saying and what I'm doing. So that will make you will come in collision course with a lot of people, because in Sweden, I can tell you, there are not many genuine people in Sweden. Most are cowards. They are utter cowards to stick out. They have no morals to stick out. They are so afraid to stick out.
Yes.
Because then maybe they get hammered. And I guess that is also the case in most of the Western European nations today.
I think so. And your experience there of being, of kind of running counter to the crowd, I suspect is pretty common to many people that are in this space, in this line of inquiry. It certainly was a common thing for me. I didn't really mind it when I was younger. I remember sort of arguing with my entire school class. I would argue against the entire class when I was 15 and 16, even if I was wrong, just to see what it was like. I didn't really mind. I wasn't really too attached to being right or wrong about things at that time. Not on historical things, but just things of like running counter to where the crowd was going. I was always very suspicious of crowds because they're a bit dense, aren't they? And you sometimes find yourself in one and you're going, I don't think this is a good place to be, really. We're not really going to get too much done. So that sense of alienation or of being really, you know, plowing your own furrow, I bet it's common for many, many people here. So it's something I recognize anyway. In fact, a few years ago, I got invited to a friend's 60th. This marks me. It's not that many years ago, so it's not a long time ago, a couple of years back. And I went up there and I saw people I'd not seen for a long, long time. Like, when I say long time, I mean since 1984. So that's a long time. It was 35 years, something like that, that I'd seen them. And of course, we all kind of grew up together. And one of them came up to me and she said, I always liked it that you used to just go home. I said, what? She said, yeah, we'd be out in an evening. And she said, you just always went off and did your own thing. And this is true. I don't know what you were like. But if we were doing things and I thought that conversation was non-existent, I would just go home. I wasn't sort of like, oh, I've got to hang around here and keep on doing that kind of thing. I mean, I remained friends with everybody, but I wasn't particularly keen to sort of just get absorbed into some blah, blah, blah situation. And so when you're talking about inquiring and history, I can relate to a lot of that. I should imagine many of the listeners can too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have the same experience as you saying this with when people are, I don't know if same, but when people are speaking about this, I don't know, very, very shallow stuff, very superficial stuff, I get so bored. I get so bored. So I don't know. It's itching in me. I can't stand it really to be. And that's also something it could put me into somewhat difficult situation, of course. But that is also one side of me that I have a very hard time just to speak to be superficial, because all the world today is superficial. It's only about superficial. It's only about look, only about money. It's nothing about any depth in people. They have no depth. They have no their courage. They don't want to do it because it's maybe wake them up. And we know how does a sleepy person act if you wake them up? They get angry.
Yeah, I did. I was a bit angry this morning when I woke up. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, they do. I'm not trying to be flippant about everything, but they do. They do get very irritated. And not only that, they shut down very fast on the hearing side of things. The hearing goes out the window. And you just get rebutted then for no reason other than there's no sort of logic to the discussion. And it's that's the most disappointing, I find. I don't know if disappointing is exactly the right word. I mean, are we not instructed to basically, okay, we've kissed this frog. It didn't turn into a prince. So we brush off the dust from our feet and move on. I sometimes find that difficult. I'll admit that. I mean, I talk to everybody. I talk to the postman, the people at the checkout, not about scriptural things, but just trying to push them a little bit to find out, you know, their views of feelings about life and where things are headed. And most people, of course, are going to give you these days a similar sort of grumpy answer about things, and rightly so. You know, they're aware of that. But getting down to the root cause of this is something that it's an appetite that seems to be quite rare, which is unfortunate for us, although on a positive note, I do feel that the last few years, the COVID debacle has assisted greatly with pushing people into all sorts of fields of inquiry. And I've never heard people reference scripture and the Bible so much as I have over the past few years. It's as if people are going there. One of the things I used to say to Eli when I first made his acquaintance about 10 or 12 years ago, once, because when I stumbled into this, actually it wasn't a stumbling thing, it was a gradual thing, but once I'd hit this sort of the identity of the individuals, the tribes, the people involved in scripture, once I got clear on that, and it was pretty quick, it was like over a day, it was like a massive light went on in my head. And I had never read the Bible up to that point, because I wouldn't read it, because I didn't like the way it was brought to my attention. I didn't like the people that said, you need to read this, in those sonorous tones. They worried me. They worried me a great deal. And I remember I was part of a last generation, probably here in England, where the vast majority of children went to church. My parents took me to church when I was an infant in the 60s. And I remember liking the stories, and that was about it. I liked the stories a lot. But I used to look at the crowd, the people in the church, and they all struck me as being wet. I can't describe it any other way. It's very rude of me to say it. I was a little child, and I wouldn't have even been able to tell you that. But at the time, I just had this experience that these were a lot of soft people. They didn't seem to be vigorous. There was no sort of, there was something subdued about them, which worried me a lot. There was far too much niceness going on. And I instinctively recoiled from that. I thought, this is not genuine. It's not exuberant enough. There were things I realized later on, massive things being omitted from what was being communicated in that space, like the really important stuff, like the really big stuff, like the word testament, for example. I never ever once heard it ever gone into, ever, that this is a contract with one race of people. And it changes everything. And that's why I was mentioning earlier that when I'm talking to sort of like someone about this at the first go, I just stick on that word until we get a few pennies to drop if we can, you know, because Isn't that the pitch? If you don't know that a testament is a contract, you're going to think that this is a universal proposition, and then you're into all this Jesus loves everyone type stuff. And that's where their minds go very, very quickly, because it's a nice place to go, isn't it? Everybody wants that, don't they? We all want somebody to love us all the time, and it's all going to turn out right if we just all, you know, are all nice to one another. And then, like you, studying history, you see that there's not too many examples of that, like none, when you mix people together, you know?
Yeah, and difference, because before I came to this this truth of the Bible, I did never go to church with my parents. They are still today, they maybe have gone into church when they were younger, but never taught me that. So I have been during all my upgrowing, during my studying in the universities, I've never gone into a church. So this is afterward this that I came to this. And as you, what you also now alluded to, what you spoke about, is this that you have in 2 Timothy chapter 4, 3, they say like this: "For there shall be a time when they shall not bear sound teaching, but according to their own desires, they shall heap up for themselves teachers tickling the ear, and they shall indeed turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to myths."
Yes. Brilliant. And excellent timing of that quote. Brilliant. Absolutely, yes. Bang on. The tickling of the ears is really what it's been about for a long time. I mean, I think there were probably preachers over here in the 1800s that were still on the right track, but the thing just got skewed, particularly over the last 150 years, I think. Taking it into this space where, I mean, of course, you look at it from their perspective, which, of course, is a warped and ever-corrupting one, which is that they're interested in getting bums on seats. So suddenly everybody's welcome. And it's like, no, they're not in the contract. What are you doing? But, of course, that's never been spoken about. It's not been pushed. So immediately the whole thing's gone wrong. You've got people in there. It's like this definition of the word Christian. How do you define? People ask me, they say, well, what's a Christian? They go, well, I'm, you know, people from our race will tell me that they're not a Christian, and I say, you are. And they go, no, I don't go to church. I go, good, jolly good thing too. You don't want to be going in there. You know, you're going to get your head full of nonsense. I said, no, you're a Christian, all right? And, of course, they don't believe me. And I say, well, what's a Christian? And I'll say, a Christian is a member of a race of people who used to be called Israelites. That used to be the name of them. But that's my definition of it, Michael. I might be running counter to other people's ways of expressing it, but it serves me well in conversation to deal with that, apart from which I mean it. And I also think it's true. I feel it very much.
Yeah, and I would say that it's true because, as you say, many white people say, like, no, I'm not a Christian. But hey, you know something? You look like Jesus Christ. You look like the one that they murdered for what he did. So even how much you say you are not, you are, in the enemy's eyes, in the Jews' eyes, you are a Christian, and they really hate you, even if you don't think so, but they really do. And that is something our people need to get out of their head. They can't trust them, not any shape or form, even how much money they have. And that is where our women need to I don't know, I don't want to say man up, but they have to take some, they can't be so easily fooled by stuff and stuff of this world.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of that goes place. My dad used to say something, well, he only said it once or twice. He probably didn't even remember that he'd said it to me, but it made a huge impact on me, more than anything that I'd ever heard in the church. I was about 13 or 14 at the time, and or he would say things in the car when we came back from. They took us, really, because it was part of the culture of England, and they were respectful of Jesus, but they weren't big churchgoers. We just went on a Sunday. That was it. Everybody did, right? So the church was packed. Right. It's a very odd thing to say these days. Nobody thought anything otherwise. Of course, as young lads, we were all trying to get out of it. Oh, I don't feel well this morning, Mom. Yes, you're all right. You know, it's fine. All that kind of stuff used to go on, and away we would go. But my dad said at one point, I can't remember what part of conversation or when it was. He said, if he came back tomorrow, Jesus, he said, if he came back tomorrow, they'd try and kill him again. And that really rang in my head. Obviously did, because I'm still thinking about it today, because I think that that's the case. Because the aims of an organized religion are not the teachings and the truth of those books. They're at odds with one another. They come to be at odds with the very root of the truth that's in the book. If you're saying anybody can come in and be a Christian, then it's meaningless. It's just become completely silly, which, of course, is what it is. These are very silly things, these organized religions, all of them. No matter what flavor you're talking about, they're all very, very silly because they will not stick to this racial specific. If it's a contract, it's exclusive. That's what contracts mean, right? They mean exclusivity. I mean, you hear it in sports where they say Bob Smith's just signed an exclusive contract with blah, 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 blah football team or whatever it is. But the word exclusive is redundant. It's not required at all. A contract, by its inherent quality, is an exclusive agreement. You're either in the contract or you're not. And you know who's in it. I know who's in it. Most of the listeners here, certainly ones at Eurofolk Radio have been around this, will know who's in it. And yet we're surrounded by a lot of people who think that everybody's in the church. And getting over that one, just to me, it's like it's going to take forever with certain people. They're just addicted to that nicey-nicey, lovey-dovey sort of thing.
Yes, because I don't know if it is, I don't know as how our people are. We don't think bad. We are very... as I say, this is a Swedish way to saying they are very naive. They are blue-eyed. They are blåögda, if you say it in Swedish. They mm-hmm. believe everything. They believe in good intention in what people say. I myself have been in the same, but then I have realized that that is not the case. They are blue-eyed, I would say. And I can just come back to also what made me, because to the point of studying history and seeing that the Jews are the problem of history and that what they have done. And then one person, because everything then by me was very, it was I don't know what to say, like a storm. I couldn't gather every piece together. I couldn't get it together. But then I was listening to an interview with, it was Pastor Eli James, matter of fact, and I think it was John Friend. And they had a discussion about this, and Eli could put the pieces together for me. So history finally made sense. And then he can also tell me something that I have been struggling with until I heard this message. It is this, that I'm often very reddish. I'm very red in my face. And when I get angry, I get red. When I get, shameful or something like that, you get red in the face because laugh at me for this. And then I can't understand, why is this? Why am I this? I couldn't understand it. But then finally, Eli said it, that Adam, to show blood in the face, aha, at last. And then I also saw that all the prophecies of the Bible has been fulfilled, and that could get that for me. I understand the world much better after that. After I listened to that, then I said, "Oh, well, then if all those prophecies are true, then of course God is true. So now I have to do better. I have to convert. I have to start believing this also, because everything is true apparently. So everything is to my knowledge. And then I had to like repent. That was how I would say. I don't want to use the word found Jesus moment, because that sounds very silly to say, but that was when I was convinced of that the Bible is true. Because before that I was skeptic. I was more atheistic, maybe not truly, but I was more skeptic. And by that time I then made it the decision that the Bible is 100% true. And then that changed my life a lot. My ex-girlfriend disappeared very quickly for some reason. And that's apparently what happened when you convert, because their demons cannot stand you. So they run away from you.
It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. I remember sort of like when I was working in London in the 80s, you'd get these fresh-faced young people coming up to you that had just come out of some evangelical training or whatever, and they had a guitar and they were singing on the subway, right? And they'd come up to you and they wanted to talk to you about why Jesus loves you. And I felt repelled. And I think your skepticism that you refer to is a really good sign. In fact, most people are skeptical of it today, and I'm glad of it. Because what they're skeptical of is this showbiz version, this manure version that's built up, particularly in recent times, over the last couple of centuries, which their instincts are telling them is not right. Good. This is good. But of course, what we're suggesting, or what we're keen on, I guess, is that people pour into the book and have a look at it with a gut. You do need a bit of guidance. You do. Because it's this thing about the misunderstanding of certain key words. Obviously, Gentile is misunderstood. Testament is misunderstood. Jew, Judahite, Judea, Judean. These words are all intermingled and get messed up in people. And then, you know, I get people sending me things about what's happening in the modern world with regards to Israel. And of course, everything in the sentences that they send me is basically backwards because they've got the context wrong, understandably so, given what they've been exposed to. So, you know, part of the challenge is to really find digestible ways to get this information out. I think we've got, there's certain internal problems with it as well. This is just my thoughts, which is, I'm aware of, you know, all of these writings by the identity writers, you know, Comparé and so on and so forth. I've got most of them. I've read them in and out and on and off for years whenever the urge has come upon me. But once I'd got that basic picture in place, I didn't feel compelled to have to read the whole book. I knew then immediately what it meant. I thought, well, the details are just going to back it up. And every time you go into it, they do. I mean, they throw up certain questions, but they back it up. So without that context, that this is about, you know, what is the book about? I've often expressed it in different ways, depending on what mood I'm in. But one of them, it seems to me, it's this history story of a tribe, a race of people who are in a contract. And what it shows you is that when they obey the terms of the contract, things flourish and thrive and goodness reigns. And when they go against it, they are brought to ruin, either rapidly or slowly. Either way, it doesn't go well for them. And then you realize that it's us, and you look around here. And so I think armed with that, you're able to drop in little things into conversations. I did one of the things I tend to drop a lot into conversations, particularly here in England. We've got people in positions of power who are not English. And someone will tell me that the Prime Minister is our Prime Minister. I say he's not. He's not English, you see. And of course, people sometimes get a bit cross about that, but they might ask me a little bit more. And I say, look, this, he can't be because he's not of us. I said, I know you've been trained your entire life to not think about race. And that as a white person, if you start talking about it, you're expecting to get a sledgehammer in the head with inside 5 seconds. I said, there's a reason why this has been built up around you in your space. I said, but these people are not of us. And I can't remember where it is, but you'll know the bit where it says, if you allow the alien to live with you, they become the head and you become the tail. And I said, look at what's happening here. What is happening here? I said, people that are not of our race are living amongst us. And it's not their fault. It's ours. It's ours for ignoring the law, and people like us have decided to not ignore it anymore. That's one way of phrasing it, or have been brought into it. And so we're keen to get lots of other people to see it, because it's very simple stuff. But it's like being hit by hammers, because it literally breaks all the other world that they've had, that they've been brought up in, and that they think is the true view of things. And practically everything you say, Michael, to people is going to put them off, isn't it? Like your girlfriend.
Oh my God! Yeah, they run as fast as they can see you. And the one you're referring to is Deuteronomy 28 verses 1-19. Blessings upon obedient, and also, and then the curses of disobedience. Mm-hmm. And that exactly tells. Maybe if you want, we can go through this chapter and read it and see if this has been fulfilled.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, if you've got it in front of you, do it. Yeah,
I do. Read it. So Deuteronomy 28, verses 1. And it shall be, if you diligently obey the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, to guard, to do all his commandments, which I command you today, that Yahweh your Elohim shall set you high above all nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, if you obey the voice of Yahweh your Elohim. And then a question, Paul, what should we obey?
The law.
Of course. And this is also something that could rub me off when you discuss with people, that the law is still in effect. And you shouldn't eat pork, you shouldn't eat shellfish. And a lot of this, oh, but it's so good. Yeah, but it's this discussion, I guess you also have been into.
Yes, I have. I had difficulty with the pork stuff, but I did give it up 2 years ago. And even now, I'm tempted every now and again. I go, no. It's just a terrible thing because there's a worldwide pork industry, but there's reasons for it. Yeah, I looked into pigs and their habits and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's the broad picture, though, of what you're addressing there with the law is true. And whenever people say, you know, this thing about Jesus loves everyone and all this kind of stuff, and of course, there's several places you can go to completely pulverize that. But you find that you can't pulverize it with people that have already got that idea in their head so strongly. It's not going to be done in one conversation, which irritates me. I just think, look, here we go. We got the truth, right? Can we move on? Can't you all be like Sherlock Holmes and deduct it and look at the logic and the facts and the evidence? And bingo, there's an amazing picture. Because the actual pragmatic understanding of Scripture, to me, blows out of the water this mystical, ooh, we're all going to be lovey-dovey stuff. I it really repulses me, that stuff, because it's like fog. It's covering it up. I feel like we're engineers. We're taking the sentences apart and go, ah, finally, I understand what this one really means now, because I understand that word and that word. And a new picture builds up very quickly, which is robust, and of course it's threatening to organized religions. Which it needs to be, because organized religions have run counter to these things all for a long, long time, because they're in the religion business. And so people say, oh, I'm not religious. I'm going, well, you know, I suppose in the definition of true religion, it's to just sit in the truth all the time for us as a people. I've got to be careful around words. We all do with regards to certain understandings and particularly rapid misunderstandings. But what's that thing that Christ said? If you love me, keep my commandments. That's it, really. There you go. Done.
Amen.
Done. We don't need, even though you and I are going to keep talking and everybody here is going to keep thinking about this, I always go back to a few cluster statements like that and go, that's it. This is it, right? If those things are not dealt with, you can forget about all your fine understanding about all the other stuff. It's irrelevant. It is literally irrelevant. In fact, it's counterproductive. It's like shooting yourself in the foot, getting lost in masses and masses of detail about these things, which I know is tempting to do. But it's the basics, really, that's missing from the lives of most of the people that we live with. And I have to work at it as well. It doesn't always come easy.
Okay, so let's continue. So let's see here. And this is verse 3. Blessed are you in the city, and blessed are you in the field. Blessed is the fruit of your body, and the fruit of your ground, and the fruit of your livestock. The increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flocks. Blessed is your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed are you when you come in, and blessed are you when you go out. Yahweh causes your enemies who rise against you to be smitten before your face. They come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. Yahweh commands the blessings on you in your storehouse and in all to which you set your hand, and shall bless you in the land which Yahweh your Elohim is giving you. Yahweh does establish you as a set apart people to himself, as he has sworn to you, if you guard the commands of Yahweh your Elohim and walk in his way. And look here, set apart people. What does that mean? You mean we shouldn't have multiculturalism in Europe and the white nations? You mean we should live only by us?
I think it means exactly that, Michael. In fact, you know, this term multiculturalism, I don't think there is such a thing. It's a shorthand word to, yet again, inject more fog into the thinking part of the mind. Over here, for example, and I would imagine it's the same everywhere else, there's not a multicultural society. There are multiple cultures, but it's not in one society. It couldn't be. It's not possible, because they're different cultures. So you have people of different races, culture being a result of race, not the other way around. You have people effectively moving around each other in groups, like oil and water. There is no real sense. They go, oh, well, I'm stood next to these people in a crowd, so we're all one. No, you're not. You're not. This person is not English, but he's our Prime Minister. No, he isn't. This person's not English and he's the Mayor of London. No, he's not. And I have that one come up regularly, all the time, you know. I mean, I think it's a key one, because of the areas of resistance in the hearts and minds of our kith and kin that's the strongest, it's this one with regards to the other races. People, white people, will go out of their way and do more to defend the well-being of other races than they will of their own kith and kin. So are you either a racist or a race traitor, I was thinking, you know, the other day. Of course, racist is a term meant to be demeaning. That's why it's been coined and brought up. But you're either one or t'other. really, it seems to me. I mean, I'm not hostile to other people. That's me personally. I'm not. I've never had trouble with people from other races at all. I don't intend to. But I'm really crystal clear that they should not live with us. Intermittently learn from us by being here for 3 to 5 years. Fine. Have diplomatic centres so that we can do trade and exchange and do things. Of course. Whatever. That's fine. But live? Put up their religious buildings? No. Be involved in our power centres? Absolutely not. Be part of the so-called democratic political process to form the laws of the nation? No. Can't do any of that. Be in our education system? Nope. Can't do that either. How about our law system? Out with you. So all of those areas that have got these people involved in them are broken. It's a bit like when churches say, oh, we can marry two men. My logic goes, right, you're not a church. You just stop being a church. They go, no, it's a church. We went, they got married. I said, it's impossible. You just participated in a farce, right? That's what you did. You participated in a thing that's got literally no standing at all in the arrangements of how we are to live. Therefore, this is not a church. If the vicar says he did that, he's not a vicar. He's out. And he might still turn up at the same building for the rest of his life and get paid, but he's finished. That's how I deal with it mentally. I just go, you're done, mate. That's it. It's over. You get back on the law or you're finished. And they don't get back on it, you know, because the comforts of this world and not upsetting people are just too tempting. They don't want to upset people with the truth. And so I think we're in the upsetting business to some degree, Michael.
No, do you say?
I think we are.
Oh, my. I've tried that a lot of time. I wear those T-shirts, many of them.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and then because you've got that understanding, you literally see what's wrong with everything instantly all the time. And it is tricky. It's tricky. But you just see it and you run counter. We then run counter to everything, literally, that is the so-called modern progressive world. I'm literally against all of it. I'm very happy about this. It makes thinking very, very easy, doesn't it? You go, well, the news is probably lying to me, so why should I bother paying any attention to it? I won't. Right? There's no point. It's silly. What's the point of getting absorbed in all this drama of the world that's based on lies? Not much point at all. So the challenge, I think, certainly for me, has been to form connections with people like you, others of the distributed tribe that are tuned in, those of us who've got our mental and spiritual and heart receivers tuning into the truth more often than others, and hopefully very accurately, and to begin to build that up. Of course, we can be very off-putting to people with these sorts of views, because you're breaking every sort of little comforting thought that they have at times. But it's unavoidable, I'm afraid, because they've had a lot of ideas march into their head, and they've allowed these ideas to take up residence there, and they've never questioned them as they went in. They just haven't done it. They've gone, I don't know whether that's right. Whereas you have, I have, most people listening are just going, it's that attitude of questioning. If you don't have that in any field, it seems to me that you are going to get completely suborned into the agreement. You're going to get sucked into it and you're going to go along and it's not going to turn out well. I have got no evidence to suggest it's ever going to turn out well.
I was thinking about something when you said this, and this is a meme I've sent out. It said like this, mm-hmm. Being awake isn't a blessing, it's a burden. Mm-hmm. Only the strongest of souls can wake up every day and see the whole world sleeping around them and still carry on as if it's normal.
Mm. Yes, it is. But it is a blessing. It's just that it doesn't feel like it. But it is. I think it just you see, because we're attached to our feelings. Me too. I'd rather feel good and buoyant than under the cosh. But it happens from time to time. But there's something about us being great. I often think, well, it's a bit like we are rough stones down here when we arrive down here, and the force of life is polishing us slowly but surely for those of us that allow it and engage with it fully, which is what I'm suggesting in great part we're doing. And we get polished like a stone, and that's what we want. We need to be polished up, and it requires a bit of force at times to do that, doesn't it? And it requires a bit of sandpaper, and you've got to grit your teeth. And it's just, I always wanted it easy when I was a kid. Why can't I be a millionaire? You know, I used to say to my dad, "Dad, why don't we live in America?" He goes, "Because we live here." But America was so appealing to most of the people I even ran with. We all used to talk about it. But they're all surfing. Of course, everybody in America is not surfing, of course. But that was the impression I got from a distance, that everybody was just surfing. They're all blonde. They're having a great time. They're all listening to the Beach Boys, and it just seemed great. Whereas I'm in the north of England, it's raining all the time, and I'm eating peas. You know, it's a bit of a – so those sorts of little things were always going on. But in the end, you have to play the cards that you're dealt. And it doesn't really matter what cards you dealt if you start to play them right. And of course, we have to go through ordeals. We just do. What that tells me is that this is meaningful. That pain, that irritation, that frustration, oh, I hate it so much as well. And I know I've got days of it coming up even now, so I never think I'm past it. There'll be things that are going to drive me crazy or something. But it's all part of this kind of polishing process of trying to get you to, I suppose, on one level, see that you're absolutely not in control. That's the key thing that I've got at the moment. I'm absolutely not in control of this space. When you're young, you think you're going to control the world. It's lovely to feel like that as well. But you're about to enter off onto a lot of harsh lessons, it seems to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And what would you say? If you have never experienced the deep paths in the valley, you will never like the heights of the mountain. You will never appreciate the heights of the mountain.
That's right. And light comes from the dark, not the other way around. And, you know, these things are to be borne in mind. There's vast amounts of lessons to be learned here. I sometimes get desperately anxious that I'm not going to learn them all, and then I realize that I'm not. I'm actually not going to do it. I used to have this experience when I used to go to libraries. When I really sort of started reading quite a bit, when I was about 14 or 15, I'd go to our local library, which was quite well stocked, and then I'd sometime go down into Leeds city centre where they had a massive library. I used to get depressed when I went into the libraries. And the reason was, I'd look at all those books and I'd think, I can't read them all. Literally, I go, I'm not going to be able to read all of them. And I sort of thought I needed to. And of course, it's impossible to read, you know, what's that thing? Of the making of many books, there is no end. This is true. So you need some kind of internal attitude that guides you to those areas that you're going to actually need, you know, teaching on. And what's that other one? You teach that which you most need to learn yourself. So we should all reflect on that and in this conversation, because I think it's true. I think there's a great truth in that, you know.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is so, because how do you get better at something? It is to teach it. So, mm-hmm. I mean, for me starting doing this, I mean, come on, I'm in Sweden. How many teachers in this message I have seen? Well, I have not seen many. I am none, I would say, to be honest with you. So, I mean, then someone has to start, I thought. So then I just jump on the bandwagon and started. So, I mean, that was, yeah. I haven't, also when I research a bit in history and trying to find, has there been any Swedish that has spoken about this? Well, I can't find them really.
Really?
I don't know. I have hard time.
So are you basically our lone man in Sweden?
No, probably not. There are more, I think, of course, but maybe not that, what you say, outspoken as I am. I am here and trying to preach it. And there are probably many people that knows the truth, but they keep it to themselves. I don't know. Maybe yes. Probably someone will come and disprove me now, but please, I've been wrong so many times before, so for sure. But that's when I start to look for this. Is there any Swedish preacher that's preaching the identity message? I couldn't find him really.
It's a very simple message to communicate. Actually, you don't need huge amounts of words or anything, and you don't really need a highfalutin intellectual approach to it. In fact, that's almost like the death knell for it, it seems to me. I mean, the so-called intellectual Christianity kills the life out of it when they get stuck into this kind of stuff. It's very, very tedious and boring. And but what we're bringing in is kind of a very pragmatic, robust aspect of it, which is well, it's just brought so much peril because it's been ignored, because it just doesn't suit the modern idiom. I mean, the whole thing, when I bumped into this, I think I probably saw Eli's work about 2012. He had some videos online then on YouTube. And I don't know quite how I'd come to those, but it was probably because I was doing a lot of inquiry into the history of banking, which is awfully exciting, isn't it? But I was. And then I came across a book by, I think it's called David Astle, an Australian, called The Babylonian Woe, which is about, and that would be about 2008 or 7, I was bumbling into that. And that was about the history of, really, of usury and the charging of interest on loans, which, of course, comes from Babylon. Babylon, of course, immediately is a thing that one recognizes and with certain accounts from the Bible. And that led me into that. So because I was researching banking, I got drawn into looking at the history of banking. And so it's banking that brought me to the Bible, which is a bit odd. But then when I was reading these other, you know, because that's what I say to people. I go, oh, yeah, it was banking. I'm not a banker, you know, but people know I've had a lot of trouble with banks, and I intend to keep that trouble going because I'm not happy with them. I view them as absolutely, for all sorts of reasons, we'll go into it today, but there's a major issue with them. And I see them very much as the main cudgel over our people. Very, very powerful sort of way of keeping people in line. And it goes all the way back to Babylon. Then you start reading about Nebuchadnezzar and the Israelites going to Babylon. And then you find out that it wasn't all Israelites that went there. And then there were other people that went there with them. And then they studied these banking techniques. So that's what brought me into it. It wasn't looking at it from the point of view of who we are. I was trying to find out what this force in the world was called central banking, what its history was, and why it was a complete con. And so that brought me to scripture, which is, that's my path, really. And then I saw Eli talking about these things. And of course, Eli covers more than just, as most of these of the people that we know in this field, they cover more than just obviously scriptural knowledge, but all of the implications and impacts of it as it exists today in our here and now. And I liked him. I liked him a lot. Great energy. Still has, of course. I don't know where he is. Do you know where he is today, by the way? We've not. I just put that he's on gadabout. Actually, I didn't say that. He's on walkabout, I put. But have you any idea? Is he having fun? He's having fun somewhere, surely, isn't he?
I think he was not supposed to be home. He's away. I don't know if he's in on a rally, something like this. So that could also be fun, of course.
It could.
But yeah. So no, I have not further information where he is about this.
Right. Okay. Well, wherever you are, Eli, bless you, and I hope you're having fun. He'll probably tell us next week when he's back, I would have thought, so that would be good. I'll tell you what I've got lined up, Michael, just for a sort of top-of-the-hour break. I've got a little song. I don't know whether it's appropriate or not, but I'm just going to play it to give us all a little break for about 3 minutes or so. It's called, actually, you might have heard it, William Elliot Whitmore. It's called Old Devils. Okay. We'll play that, and I'll be back in about 3 minutes. Here we go.
Devils are at it again. Who knows what they'll do? And it's true right now, like it was back then. The old devils are at it again. From behind these bars, the desperation, death, and despair. From what little I hear of the outside world, well, it's not too different out there. And they tell me there's a war without no end. The old devils are at it again. They've died by the millions, children, devils. You know who I mean, these animals in the dark, malicious politicians with nefarious schemes, charlatans and crooked cops. A moonshine still gets you 5 to 10.
The old devils are at it again. Did they ever stop, Michael? I don't think they ever stopped, did they? They were at it all the time. So, there we go. Maybe a semi-appropriate song. I don't know, but I just always think it's good to just have a little break in the middle of a two-hour haul there. So, so that's what we got. Next time you get to pick the song, okay?
Yeah, it's. I think a break is good because I think people's attention span is maybe 45 or 1 hour, then you need to have a break or something, otherwise people will... Yeah, they lost a bit their attention. And I can read something that came up in the chat room from Brother Herbert that is very true in the subject we are speaking about, this defining this truth and trying to get people to this truth. He says like this, everyone does not respond to the same delivery or tool. We must be compassionate and long-suffering to our kinsmen who have not yet learned the truth. Some people need their biscuit buttered. Some need a 2.4 across the face. It is Yah who gives them understanding. Amen. Yep. It is, we are the one that's sowing the seeds, but Yahweh is the one that will keep it grow. And he also had a verse here, which is Isaiah 28, verse 27. For the fishes are not... treasured with a treacherous instrument. Neither is a cart wheel turned about upon the common, but the flitches are beaten out with a staff, and the common with a rod.
Yes, he's right. I quite like the bit, Brother Haber, about the two before. So that's how you say that, just like that 2x4, certainly in English over here, we call it a bit of two before. It's a piece of wood, 2 inches by 4 inches. So it's about a bit of a lump. And he's talking about... giving people a whack. And he's absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, I take different approaches with different people. I'm always trying to suss out just where the edge is, and I just try to push that little bit all the time, you see, just to kind of get a response. I can't help it. It's just it seems the right thing to do, you know.
Yeah, and that's also something you have to, I have my, what do you say, gauges on my, I look for. If people looking to mainstream media, are they on Facebook, Instagram, blah, 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 blah. They would say the possibility that they are very open-minded has shrunk a bit. Sometimes they also have open mind, of course, but it's kind of, if they watch too much TV, well, they are beyond getting saved, I feel, sometimes. So, yeah, I also have my rods out to feel if people are open to this message, and as I say, you give them in small dosage, because you don't go fall in all immediately with this 2x4. That sometimes maybe works, but sometimes they just they run away in the opposite direction.
Yeah, although it could be fun every now and again. Sometimes you got to watch yourself if you're a bit. You just start wailing away on people very quickly. I mean, it's difficult. It is difficult. I mean, St. Paul's difficult. It was difficult for me, actually. The whole thing about St. Paul, oh, he's a very bad lad, you know, and you even hear this now. But it's one of these things that's got to be studied. Study to show thyself approved. It's absolutely the case. And I think another thing that keeps occurring to me with regards to looking at ways of getting the information across ever more effectively, because I think there are more effective ways that we're going to find. I just want to find them more quickly, if possible, is almost like breaking some of the knowledge down into very small parceled lumps and just having people nibble at them. For example, a whole series of little short videos by short under 3 minutes. 2 to 3 minutes tops, really, where you maybe look at a word, you know, this is what it actually means, and you create tons of these things, a lot of them, which can be consumed in any order, almost like a smorgasbord of information. And when they begin to nibble at it, it will begin to build the picture up. I mean, we all like stories. Stories are immensely powerful. They're amongst, if not the most powerful things that we've got. But to this day, the story, we are drawn in. When someone starts telling a story, very, very powerful what happens to you. You want to be in the story, so you are. Your mind sort of tunes in with it. And one of the things I've droned on about this phrase I've got from Plato, who said, those who tell the stories rule society. And I would suggest that's pretty true. Look at who's telling them. 24/7, courtesy of the great one eye, the all-seeing eye, wreathed in light in the corner of everybody's room, just going on and on and on and on and on. And most of the people that participate in the media are effectively highly tuned, highly effective echo chambers. Very little individual thinking based on actually being able to strip down an argument, look at it and go, this doesn't hold up. There's very little of that. It's as if the whole world agrees that these people are bad and these people are good. And of course, you know, what you were talking about with history, it's very useful. The net has been an absolute boon. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it, really. It came along at the right time, but then it was always going to, I suppose. You could look at it that way. And suddenly, documents that you didn't even know existed and the contents that you didn't even know existed were available to you. And it became this treasure trove of going, oh, now we can actually read certain parts of history from the viewpoint of the so-called losers. And suddenly things shift. They shift enormously. And that's one of the frustrations as well, I think, in communication. You know the arguments may be that the normal Bible reader or Christian is going to present to you. You know that. You also know the other one. They don't know the other one. You've got both sides. Yeah. We've got both sides, or we've got two aspects, very strong aspects of it, and it makes it very difficult. It really does. I think I mentioned, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I had some Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on the door. I always engage with them. I engage with anybody, really. They were very nice, and they were both wearing very nice hats, and I did compliment two men of a certain age, very kindly, well-dressed English types, and they handed me their little pamphlet, as they do, and they went through it, and they said a few things to me, and they said, would you agree with that? I said, yes. They said, oh, well, we're on the same wavelength then. I said, well, not quite. And it was great. We didn't have an argument or anything. But it was good. And I wanted to bring in the Testament thing. So I did. I just mentioned it. I said, you know, it's a racially specific document, this. And, of course, I was a bit silent. And that was it. It was gone. You see, the thread just got broke then. I don't mind. It's okay. But you've got to keep asking. If you don't keep asking that question of people, you don't know what you're going to get back, do you? And I saw them actually on the high street about a week later and said hello to them. And they were, oh, and they kind of remembered me a little bit. And I moved on. It's all quite cheery. There's nothing antagonistic. And there's no point even going there with that kind of stuff. But it's a bit like trying to plant seeds all the time. And you never know when they might flower. You really don't. So I think we should always keep planting as many seeds as we can whenever we get the opportunity.
Yeah, and I also have visits by the Jehovah's Witnesses, have discussions about biblical verses, but the first time the guy that came, he left, and then he came with a friend and spoke also, and tried to get me into their, what do you say, I don't know what to call it, church, whatever, say, come and study the Bible with us. And, no, thank you.
You didn't join? You didn't leap at the chance? Good grief, no. How rude.
No, I didn't.
I know, it's true. It's tricky. I've got people that are kind of all studying it, but I'm not part of their little group. There's some people that I know, and it's good. And they come back and they say this, and I go, I don't think that's right. I mean, that's how I phrase things. It's sort of, I try to pretend. It's not that I'm a know-it-all about all these things. I'm actually not. There's huge areas of my knowledge on this that need filling in, and I'm fine. I'm in no rush, because as soon as I got that basic thing, I went, ugh. I just, like, all the tension went out of me, and I just went, that's it. That's great. I just, what puzzles me a bit is why people are not intrigued or as blown away by it as I was when I first stumbled into it. I don't, you know, what are we saying? We're saying, look, there's an invitation here to you, which you might find a little bit awkward, but it's astonishing, and you don't even know it exists. And you've got, if you read this book correctly, you'll find out. You'll find out why all these hellish things happened in the past. There's a repeated pattern of why they keep happening. And one of the things I've been saying to people recently, I said, it's bad now, isn't it? They go, yeah. I said, well, if you want to feel a bit better about it not being as bad as it used to be, go read the book of Jeremiah. I said, that's really, really bad. Really? I said, yeah, that's really, really bad. Because this idea, you know, that Yahweh is quite prepared to let armies be built up to come and deal with those that will not keep the terms of the contract. And you know that old phrase as well, fear God. When I was younger, I used to think, oh, it doesn't really mean that. And people will still tell you that. Now, recently, the last few years, I think it means literally what it says. I think you need to fear God. I think you need to. I don't mean cowering. I just mean you need to really be respectful of that. There's something, you know. What's that other phrase? His patience is almost infinite. Almost.
And also fear of something can be the one you give allegiance to. The one example, a government that you giving allegiance to it, that could also be the, and you are, yeah. So fear doesn't yes. mean, oh, you should be afraid, but it's more, you have to give allegiance to them.
Of course.
And,
and
people today, what do they do? Well, governments. That's their biggest god. And in Sweden, we have this. They want the government to be their little nanny, to give them everything. Oh, they're afraid. Oh, we do that. And ask your little nanny. Take responsibility is not in the, I don't know, the Swedish way, really. They think the governments will help them. So this is kind of appalling to see.
It's a swing, isn't it? I mean, if you look at, say, if I think about England in the 1800s, which was, I don't know, let's say it's pure capitalism. Of course, there's never been such a thing, but let's suppose it's very capitalistic. People were treated like dirt. They were treated really badly. There's no two ways about it. People were effectively enslaved because of the dominion of the commercial class accelerating at huge speed. This is really much of the theme, the subtext of much of Dickens' works. He's talking about these hellish conditions that normal working families in England lived under. So the drive to create a socialist state or a caring state is completely understandable from that perspective. People didn't do this, I think, from an evil point of view. The problem with both of them is that it's always about having some men or groups who are apparently in charge of making these major decisions, and you don't get a say in it, ever. So the whole idea, you know, that democracy is somehow some inclusive thing is hilarious. But of course, people buy it because it's never inquired into in a serious way in the mainstream media, because they make their bread and butter from it too. I saw something with a politician over here recently. In fact, it's a clip I'll probably be playing in my show this coming Thursday. A guy called Rory Stewart. And he was just talking about what he thought politics was until he got involved in it, and the misconception that everybody has. And the misconception is that politicians have power. They don't. They don't. They don't even want it. They won't know what to do with it if they got it, really. These are mediocre people at best, very ambitious, but they've got nothing to offer us. And so, you know, the invitation is, what is biblical teaching about? It's about individual responsibility in line with the law. It's about the law. And I was doing a thing the other day about banking, or droning on about banking, and someone that I know, I'd not spoken to, sent me had listened to it and said that I really enjoyed that, or words to that effect. He said, I think it's all gone wrong with the fact that people don't obey the first commandment. Love God with all your heart and all. And it's, you know, one of the questions I've asked over recent times is, why is that number one? You know, like a child. I know why it's number one, but you go, why? Why would that be number one? Because without that, none of the others are going to amount to anything. And with it, all of the others are possible. Because if it's as if you are going to make something your God, and you don't want to be making it other human beings. It's not good. The track record on that front is very poor. It's very, very poor. And so this is the conundrum of living down here and living with our kith and kin and all these different forces pulling in different directions about, I know best. No, I know best. I know best, and so does my wife. You know, this kind of stuff. Whereas in Yeshua, and in God, we've got the leaders, we've got the kings that we need. So why don't we just get in line with that stuff and let's see what happens? Because no one's ever really seen what's really going to fully happen if we do that. So it's extremely encouraging to think in that way. I find it that way anyway.
Yes, and now just a curious question. We spoke about how I found this message. This was my long travel to finding the truth, and that is also always something that's been – I always been like addicted to it. I can't stop. Yep. I can't help it. I can't really help it. But how was your journey? Where you started in banking, and something I was just in a comment in this is that every time when you're starting, for example, I think a famous scientist said this. I don't remember his name right now, but he said, the first gulp of science will make you an atheist, but in the bottom of the glass, you find God. And I would say that is the reason with all of the topic you are digging in. With all the topic you dig in, banking, health, in history, every time that you take the first gulp of it, you probably get an atheist. But when you are in the bottom, you will find Yahshua Messiah, Jesus Christ, Yahweh in the bottom. So how was your journey? When did it start, and how has that developed?
Yeah. Well, as I was saying, I guess the connection really with it was seeing a couple of videos from Eli, which I saw maybe two years or so before I even made connection with him. So probably about 2012, something like that, I think, roughly. So maybe, 10, 12 years ago. And as I said, the line was that I'd been studying the banking stuff. We stumble across Babylon. I see these biblical references to money, true weights and measures, that kind of stuff. So I go into that. I just start looking at it. And then I come across this other material that's talking about, having the wrong end of the stick with this and looking at the whole thing. And I was also at the time really looking at a lot of historical things with regards to the pyramids and that part of the world and artifacts and all this kind of stuff. And slowly but surely, these things came into the space. And at the time, my actual abiding question was to actually find out who the Jewish people were. For the simple reason, you see, I didn't set off on this thing with any sort of views or judgments prior to this. I had no reason to. All that happened was that the more and more I studied banking, the more and more I saw that it was really the dominion of those people more than any other. It's not that other people are not involved in it. So then you look at that, you see how kings had made use of them as tax collectors, this whole sort of management of day-to-day life, then the acquisition of power, then you see the thing about the so-called split of the church, Henry VIII and Rome, that kind of stuff, what's going on. Then you find out that the Khazars were basically the root of the black nobility in Venice, and that the Venetians didn't like the Pope, and that they'd had a scrap with him, and that they decided to split the church by funding Martin Luther through the Fuggers so that he comes up with his stuff. Not that Luther was wrong, but that's not the point. The point is that they were looking to split it up, and the reason was they didn't like the Pope. He'd sent an army against them in 1400 and odd called the League of Cambrai, of which Britain was part, because we were a Catholic country then, to use the terminology of the day. So this line of inquiring about these things, I wanted to know why there was a Bank of England and why I didn't have shares in it. Seriously. Ooh, hear the seagulls, Friday's atmosphere. It's that time of the year. So it was this build-up of all this historical stuff, which I found fascinating, because, I realized I'd gone to school and no one taught me about banking. And then I would ask Peter, I said, you went to school? Yeah. Did they teach you anything about banking? No. Then you find out in degree courses on economics, they spend about 1 or 2 days on the central bank. All of this just sends out signals that there's something not right. And then you find out that this something not rightness is in every area. It's not just there. It's just that's the one I got introduced to. That's the one, the portal through which I got pulled into this space. And so looking at all these different history lessons brought me to these other history lessons and alternative accounts, which suddenly seem to have far more traction and sense attached to them. But I needed, personally, a lot of extracurricular information to be able to make the picture get clear. And I mentioned Holmes before, but Holmes is a good example. It's based on deductive logic, removing those things that are implausible and so on and so forth. You keep paring it down and paring it down and boiling it, and then you go, ah. And it's like what you were saying about the scientists. When you get to the bottom of it, suddenly the very thing that you thought was totally absent is the very thing that's underpinning all of it. God. And you need, because if it's not God, it's going to be men, and if it's men, you're back into that world of madness. So that's what pulled me into it. And then I read Comparé and all these other people, but I know this sounds so almost cocky, I don't mean it to, because I'm not as knowledgeable about this stuff as many others here. I don't feel the need to become knowledgeable. I just had this massive clunk click, great, got it. But literally that's how I felt. And then I look at my people, I go, oh, now it all makes... Now you can look at everything from this historical perspective and you see why things are the way they are today. And you see that there's a fight on, even though there shouldn't be a fight on, but there's a fight on for who gets to be the inheritor of the contract. There are these people that want to be on it, and they're not. They don't like it. And they've been waging war on us, those of us that are in the contract, for a long time. And yet most of us that are in it aren't even aware that it exists. They're even part of this deal. They don't know. So, but then, that's also borne out in scripture, isn't it? I will send them a great delusion. Maybe it didn't mean specifically for that, but I see people being in a case of like spiritual amnesia. And it's understandable. You can see all these things that have taken place and not being able to work out what the problem is and not being willing to live alone. Whereas England is really interesting because we did live alone right up to 1945, really. Although, of course, the country was overthrown in 1694 when the bank was imposed upon us, courtesy of alien forces. And, you know, I spent half my time going around telling people that. I said, we're not in control of anything, you know, don't talk rot. And I would say, there's no such thing as the British Empire. It never existed. There was no empire by, of, or for the benefit of the British people. I said, you'd have just been roped into it, sent around the world and killing some poor bugger in the middle of nowhere. And he'd been killing you. And that was it. Meanwhile, back at home, your wife and your children are down a mine pit, naked, shoveling coal for some idiot who's making loads of money off their backs and killing them off by 35. That's what it used to be like here just 200 years ago. It's not long, is it? It's not long. And so it was all of those things came together for me, Michael, and I just went, right now. Because that fight, that conflict underpins every single bit of trouble that we see and that we're receiving from the manipulation of media, from the perversion of our culture, from the ruination of sexual roles, from the destruction of the family. All of them are rooted in this covetousness that this other group have got for our role in a contract which, bizarrely, most of our people don't even know they've got. How complex is that? It is complicated. It's quite a plot. It really is.
Yeah, it is. And so it is basically the banking and also history is the one that has led you to this. And have you noticed when you found this, I don't know how it was before, that people are tending to disappear from you? I don't know. Your flock is getting smaller anyway.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I never felt as though I had much influence with this stuff. In fact, when I first stumbled across it, I didn't speak to anybody about these things for quite a few years because I just thought they're not – it made sense to me because of the way I'd had a run-up at it. And so all the sort of furnishings in my mind made it sense. But I could see from other people's point of view that it didn't make any sense at all because they had this – view of organized religion and what a Christian is so strongly in their minds that it was very difficult to nudge it. I mean, I've got a book, say, on my shelf, St. Paul in England, I've got it somewhere. In fact, I saw it only the other day, and it's that he came over here in, I don't know where it was, 40 AD or something like that. And I handed it over to someone who I knew was religious in a way. This is about 10 years or so ago, 10 or so. And they kept it around. They said, rubbish. After 2 weeks, that was it. I couldn't be bothered to go any further. I just went, what? It's not. It's a very, very interesting book. One of the things it talks about, for example, is that when the disciples came here and established this church out in Cornwall, down at wherever it is, you know, Glastonbury, that they met with Druids. The Druids didn't have a problem with them at all because the root of the teaching was exactly the same that they obeyed. So the connections between the ancient Druids and their teachings and the fact that Joseph of Arimathea mined tin here, had a tin business, and that Christ came here apparently as a young boy. And there's a little village down in Cornwall, I forgot the name of it now, and on certain little fence posts and on walls, you've got these little stone carvings or little plaques, and it's saying things like, to the boy who once lived here. It's like a little cryptic clue that they have embedded within the walls over there and down there. These things connected me because of the history of Britain and stuff. I thought, that's interesting. And of course, it only made sense, all of these things, because of this racial aspect, because of these tribes. And then when you look at the founding of America and the boats that set off from here, you know, the pilgrims and all that kind of stuff, the bulk of them, 90% of the men and women on those boats came from East Anglia. They came from East Anglia in England, about 90% of them. And they were the tribe of, I don't know if it's Issachar or someone, it might be, or Zebulon, I can't remember, but someone, I've got some wonderful books by what you would call the British Israelite movement over here, which is, they're excellent books. It's just this thing where they get a little bit confused at the end. So you just, you have to know about who's involved. They want to involve everybody, unfortunately. But the archaeological research that was done, around, you know, in the 1800s to bring this knowledge to bear That made a big difference to me. And seeing this, that there was this line, and every time you really examined it, you saw that the line was always there, in spite of all the troubles and calamities that we've endured. And there was a movement, I don't know if you're aware of it here. I mean, I could do with a book on it, but the movement here in England, in the Church of England, with this knowledge was huge at one point. I'm thinking round about the 1840s, middle of the century. They reckon there were about 2 to 3 million congregants who were aware of the racial aspect of the Israelite message. And there was a guy called Newman who left the Church of England because he wrote to somebody, he said, if this doctrine, that's what he called it, right? Or if this truth takes hold, the church is finished. To which I would reply, great, that's good. That's exactly what we want, right? But he left and became a Catholic and went on to become Cardinal Newman, because he wanted a different flavour of organised religion. So it's strange, isn't it? That the truth is not this sort of, to me, it's not this highfalutin, elaborate ceremonial stuff that's grown up. I understand why it has. You know, we've got modern technology here. We have things like publishing and all sorts of other things that they didn't have over a millennia and a half, apart from the men that had the book. And so the idea of, you know, theatricals, as it were, and ceremonies in churches to kind of maintain the truth down through stories, that makes sense. I can see that. But it, some way it went wrong. You know, what would we have done under those times? You know, we'd have been talking around fires and doing these things, and that's how it was maintained. So Yahweh has always made sure that there's a way for this information to keep coming down the line, in spite of all the lies that the organized religions have put around it. Right in the center of it, there's this kernel of truth, which you and others have been able to see. And we just need more people to see it, I guess.
Yeah, and just to see in the darkness that we both, I guess, faith, because I guess England is today also very similar to how Sweden is, because it's so utterly superficial, everything. Maybe it's because I'm in the main capital, so I only see this superficial part. So maybe there's more better on the countryside, but still, maybe I will be disapproved. I hope so, that there's some hope here, but otherwise, I read someone said that Sweden is basically hell on earth because it's the most atheistic country you can find on earth today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so as you say, also that's something that is when you experience it, it's not that funny, but you learn a lot. It's a good it's a good test for your faith anyway, to be in a place like this. So it's as I said, it's not a burden. It's a gift to have this knowledge, this truth, to know why is this as it is, or why am I thus? I don't know what to say. It's because why I've always been like this. My personal questions. To be honest, this truth answer the questions I had. So that's helped me a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, I tell you what, Michael, we've got someone here trying to join us in the studio. I haven't even announced it, actually. We've got half an hour to go. Yeah, if you wanted to call in, I'll just announce it and add them in a second. Icon, I think it is. So you can probably hear us. You just go to, what's the best way to do it? Yeah, go to speakfreeradio.com/bloodlines, and it'll automatically bring you through on your browser into the studio, and you can have a word if you want to have a word about these things. But let me add... Or you can also go to speakfreeradio.com and click the call-in tab, and you'll see the Bloodlines image there. Click it, and it'll bring you here too. Let's just add this person in. I don't know who it is. Hi there. Icon.
Hi.
Is that right?
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the chat and the show. Pleased to have you. Sorry, I hope you weren't waiting there too long. I was so involved talking to Michael. We're yakking away.
No, I wasn't. Can you hear me?
Super. Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear. Wonderful.
Oh, good. This is a microphone I haven't used in about 10 years, so I didn't know.
It works. It's great. It works great. Yeah.
Yeah. I had dinner with Eli about 10 years ago, two different times when I was in Chicago.
Yes.
And years ago, I was waiting for Eurofolk to come on air. So that's how long I've known Eli. It's been a long time. And yeah. I'm in. I was listening to you talk about kind of my favorite subject right now. I call it evangelism, I guess, and why people are not. I've got a guy that was my electrician that emailed me a couple days ago, and he's listening to these megachurch evangelists that are, you know, they've got these views on the end times prophecy. And he wanted me to evaluate this film, this video of his. And you don't know where to start. You know, you say to yourself, well, he's completely wrong.
Yes.
You know, and so it and I've been trying to reach some of my friends, but I think it's been about 4 or 5 months. I've been working on some in depth on this subject of evangelism. I think I've come up with some ideas. I was listening to you guys talk about your trying to reach people with our message. I have a friend of mine, pastor in Oklahoma, that I talk to whenever I want to. But I'm, you know, there's doctrinal differences even in our, even among us. I call us true Israelites, is what I call our doctrine. Yeah. And there's doctrinal differences. And, you know, you don't even want to cross swords with a fellow Israelite, let alone someone out there in the world that is completely lost. And so, but I have some thoughts if you'd like to hear them.
Yes, please do.
Sure.
That's what this is all about. It's wonderful.
Okay. Actually, I'll just start. There's three of these, I'll call them obstacles. And by the way, I just love the English. We listen to BritBox, the period dramas that were done around for the turn of the century every night. I got to get off that subject. It's too emotional. Anyway, the two things I'd like to bring up is the organic community and the clergy-laity distinctions. And when you talk to even someone that understands the Israelite message, is what I call it, that's a pastor, they're in what I call the Baptist mode. There's the pastor, and then there's the clergy. And in their mind, and they don't realize they're doing it, but when we're interrelating with one another, you're in one of those two camps. And if they assume that if you're not a pastor, that you're dumb. And if you're a pastor, then I think I'm not one, so I wouldn't know, but I think they think it's an exclusive club. And so even among ourselves, we're divided in these two camps, and we're not even aware that we are.
Yes.
There's a guy in Little Rock, Arkansas, that is on shortwave radio, and he understands the racial message, as far as I know. And in fact, his last message was on that kinism. And I've written emails to him twice now. The first time he responded to me, but the last two emails I've sent him, he doesn't respond to me.
Right.
And I think the reason is my questions are too pointed. They're too doctrinal. And when, you know, the other pastor I was telling you in Oklahoma, I talked to him 3 or 4 days ago. I said to him, I said, you know, I lost my train of thought. But back to the two subjects. The two problems is the clergy-laity distinction, which I was just outlining. And the other one is the problem of organic community. We Israelites, by our nature, are we want to be together. There's a name for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's too early. I started my coffee and I haven't drank it yet. But I was listening intently to the two of you when I was getting out of bed a few minutes ago, and I thought, well, I think a common experience among us Israelites is our isolation. It's just the isolation is just, I was traveling on the road when I first ran into you and to Eli, back when you were just starting your, I was listening to Eli on Talk Shoe.
Yes.
And then I came on board with Eurofolk Radio. So I've known Eli for many years. And like I say, I've met him twice now. And but I think that I used to wonder, well, why don't we just get together? And I think I've kind of got a focus on this now. We're social, there's the word, social animals. And we have to bring along our intimate kin, in other words, our close family, along with us wherever we go. Like when I was trying to raise my daughter, I was constantly looking for a church. And mm-hmm. I was constantly being disappointed. I finally wound up at an Adventist church, which just had the largest high school in North America, if you can imagine that.
Right.
And my daughter, in her, you know, critical years, was able to find a little bit of community while we were at that Adventist church.
But right.
I saw things there that like, for instance, you sit in a Bible study, and this one fellow was a descendant from the Bosque sheep herders up in Wyoming, Colorado, and he told about arranged marriages. I thought that was common in his. They brought the Bosque over here to tend the sheep 100 years ago.
Okay.
And so there's a whole community of them up there. And so if you can see where I'm going with this, we are, or I call it the organic community. We are, our natural tendency is to look for an organic community. And when you're isolated in your doctrine, it's so hard to do that. So that's my first point. So those are my two
yeah.
points. The organic community and the laity-clergy distinction.
Yeah, they're good points. I think, obviously, where you live, you've got vast distances. I mean, where I live, we're almost like living cheek by jowl. This is such a densely populated part of the earth where I live in England. Maybe not so densely populated for Michael, but where you are, Icon, you, of course, you've got these huge distances. So I would imagine maybe the yearning to get together is even stronger. In England, people are trying to get away from one another because you're actually literally almost like living in each other's lap. It's, you know, I mean, these discussions that people have about becoming a prepper and all this, that and the other, that just literally, there's nowhere to go and prep in England. There's no, you're never more than sort of like 30 yards from the next human being. It's that, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's very highly populated. So it makes you think yeah. and operate in a different way. And I think, you know, it just does. The challenges of geography have been dealt with differently by different groups at different times. And, so these would change things culturally. My thing, I mean, what I would suggest here is that what we're doing right now is a church, as I understand it. It's a gathering, is it not, of the elders to come together and discuss the affairs of state. Now, if you tell me that that's what a church was, count me in. I'm quite interested in all that. And I think I got very suspicious of ceremonials, as it were, in churches, because I didn't know what they were for. I mean, I'm not saying they don't make people feel good, but it seemed to be a lot of time spent on doing things like that, whereas I wish they'd spent time saying, actually, this word means this, and therefore this is the actual truth of the situation, because I think it's a practical book, you see, Scripture. I think it's a pragmatic thing. It's a guidance thing. You go, look, we don't need it all dressing up in all this sort of dreamy language. I'm not saying it's without beauty. Of course it is. But it's that aspect. It's almost like the sort of working approach to it. It's like an engineering manual. This is how you live on the earth if you're an Israelite person. This is what happened to your forefathers. It went very bad for them. Here's why it went bad for them. Here's how you make sure it doesn't go bad for you. Whoops, it's going bad for you again. Anybody want to pay attention? That kind of thing. And I'm pulling people in. But, of course, the modern world has basically inducted people into a worldview relentlessly, courtesy of modern media, that we're all one big thing, and that there is a thing called the human race. And I pointed out, I've never met anybody in the human race. I'm not in it. And, you know, people talk to me about this. I don't know what you're talking about. There's no such thing. There are races, but there's no such thing as a human race. So it's that, you know, the area where we've suffered the most, I guess, is the conditioning of huge numbers of our people into a kind of dormant stupor. They're very happy and very comfortable, I think, but they're getting less happy and less comfortable rapidly under current situations. So, and it's only going to keep on going that way, it seems, does it not, from the way things are laid out?
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. This with the, as you said, with the communities, Sweden, yeah, it's pretty crowded, but that's when you are in the main cities like Gothenburg, Stockholm. Yeah, then it's crowded. But if you get to the countryside, I mean, Sweden is a big landmass. So it's bigger than Germany by its landmass. It's bigger than England, and we are fewer people, like 10 million. And how many is indigenous Swedes? So maybe, I don't know when it could be 7, maybe 6 mm-hmm. million. And the other one is the foreigners that they have pushed upon us. Because we are the threat to them. So, and you also feel this big immigration that there. And this also that you say, Icon, this about being in communities. I think that is very important because we need to speak with each other. And that is something like this. This works, but the best connection you get also when you are actually, when you're looking at the people's faces, you see their eyes, you see how they react. You can, it's much easier to yes. connect with them than by this, because that's, you kill off often the whole conversation with, you know, today it's so usual by younger people using their phones for SMS, for messages. They don't even speak. They sit on their social media and they are more alone than anybody else because they think they are known by so many by getting their likes and their hearts and everything on their pictures. But this is just, mm-hmm. again, their big inflated ego that they have that they want to satisfy. But this goes away very fast. So getting the, what does not go away fast? It is the teachings of Yahweh, those spiritual talks. That is what can make me very happy. If I see a friend, I often just want to speak. I can sit in a very, sometimes also can have a beer. And then I sit in a very lousy pub and I can speak about spiritual things, about how evil the Jews are and that all, that they are real liars and all this, those spiritual stuff can make people run away. But hey, I don't care really. It makes me feel good to speak about this and try to warn people about them.
Yes, I agree. I think it's, I mean, I think it's,
I'd like,
it, sorry, Icon.
I'd like to add a few things about meeting together.
Yeah, please do.
If you don't mind. Is it okay?
Yeah, sure.
I'm from Colorado. I'm native from Colorado. And, you might understand what I'm talking about. When I got out of college, I was involved with what they call the Jesus movement when I was in college in my 70s. And I moved to Denver, and I was looking for fellowship. And there was a guy here that had a house church. He was Plymouth Brethren. Do you know what that is, you guys?
Plymouth Brethren. Yeah.
Well, they are the foundation of dispensationalism. That's that in England. That's J.N. Darby and the Plymouth Brethren.
Oh dear.
And
yes.
Anyway, but there's some good here. There's some good here. They called me and I said, yeah, I moved up here and yeah, I would like to, and they had a house, what's called a house church, and Rick was they, and instead of having the, they were against the clergy laity distinction, which was really good, really good, and there was a guy named Rick, and I can't remember the other fellow's name, and they were the elders, and we sat in a circle, and you know, you could raise your hand or address and say, I want to sing a song.
Did you sing a song, Icon? Did you sing one?
Well,
I'm not going to ask you to sing it here in the show. That would be wrong of me.
I'm a bit tempted. I'm not saying as an individual. I mean,
yes.
Instead of looking at the hymn book, but we could all sing together, and then we'd have, you know, little song books and stuff, and we could all sing together if we wanted to, you know, if there was an interest in that. And then this is trying to remember back a long time ago, over 40, 50 years ago. But it was really wonderful. And then at the end of the service, there was always a meal. And one of the elders is in their house, and there'd be a meal. And, you know, it was an opportunity. There was a couple of women there, and you got, you know, you could split off and maybe find a partner. So you had all the elements of an organic community there. But I was I have a disciple that I'm trying to bring along, and he's having a real hard time because he's in his mid-30s, and he realizes finding a woman at this stage of the game might be a little difficult.
Yes, but I think it might be. I've got two sons. I feel like I've got to be a matchmaker for sons and everything. Icon, can you just hold there for a second, because we have another person with it. No, it's okay. We've got. You were talking about food, and I was thinking as well that breaking bread together, to use that phrase, is massively important. In fact, something changes when you're sat down all eating together.
Speaking of food,
the person has arrived. Speaking of food, it's called Chip. I'm not trying to be rude here, but here we go. Let's add Chip to the stage. Chip, hi, welcome to the conversation.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Michael. And no, I'm not a French fry, but my name is Chip. Thank you.
That's good. That's good.
I want to thank you for your influence on Speak Free Radio. I listen to it darn near most of the day, on and off, different shows.
And you're still alive, Chip. This is quite impressive. Yeah, well done.
but I'm not going to take much of your time. I thought the show today has been fabulous, but here's my question. Yesterday, I heard some great shows. The Fetch, and his guest was who?
Jody Kay, John Kaminsky.
John Kaminsky.
Yes.
And John Kaminsky has been on the radio a long time, but over the last couple of days on three different shows. Fetzer had him, and then last night with Blackbird 9.
Right.
All along, the Israel as a nation message, 10 years ago, it grabbed me. But and people okay, let me start over. Years ago, people like John Kaminsky, they get it right, that we have an enemy out there, an enemy that is against the white race, and they're in banking, and they've corrupted the churches, they've corrupted the medical field, they've corrupted everything, and John Kaminsky will tell you that, the Fetch will tell you that, Jim Fetzer will tell you that. Yet, at the heart of it, they're all atheists, and they don't get our point of view that Yeshua prayed to Yahweh. Yeshua was not a Jew, and the Jews today are imposters. So can you speak to the confusion on the radio? I just need help here, and thank you very much.
I see. Just get stuck in there, Chip. Why don't you? It's a good question, and it's one that's floating around. I think the essence of communication here should be to have the portals open as wide as possible so that you, as you already have done, and others, can begin to evaluate what people say for yourself. That's really the key thing. There's a temptation, of course, always to act as a censor, but I don't think that's healthy. The fact is that in the end, the truth will out. For some of us, it ends out much more rapidly than others. And of course, you come across as some kind of snotty, arrogant, patronizing person when you talk like that. But there's not much else there's no other way to really phrase it. The essence, I think, of what you were saying is this. The bit that's, I would kind of say, is missing, because I see these things all the time from, Eli would call them white nationalists, or the nationalist circles. Well, we're all, you know, you've got to define what a nation is, and a nation's a race of people in a tribe. That's it. That's what a nation is. It's a racial thing. So there's a point down which the sort of thinking goes the same, and then it kind of stops or splits off. Now, why? I think there could be also a myriad of reasons for why. I think people might have a sense of ickiness about organized religion. I certainly do. I try not to talk about it in that way because I see this as something that dwarfs organized religion. It's got, it's not that it's not got anything to do with it. It's that organized religion has been used to carry it to us to this point in time. But you're right. There has to be some kind of a jump. I disagree. There are lots of people that I like, and lots of people have certain opinions that I vehemently disagree with because I think they're completely wrong. And it's not because I'm thinking it. It's because I, probably like you and Michael and Icon here and others, have a pile of documents which we've studied which say no. And maybe the only difference is that you and I and others have been put in a position where we've seen this other story and these other people haven't yet seen it. I mean, there's a thing that's been flooding around for a couple of years that the whole idea of Christianity is that it's a Jewish psyop. This is hilarious because the actual psyop is the idea that the Bible is a Jewish psyop. That's the psyop, not the fact that that it is. It gets so convoluted, you see. And if you're susceptible to one lie after another, you're never going to find your way back to firm ground. You can, all of us are prone to that, probably less than others because of this sort of reinforcement space. But yes, it's a good question. You see, many people, I think you have to go with people who, and go with what they say that you like and pick and choose. Isn't that the whole idea that you're going to be a judge? You know, because they always say, don't judge people. And I go, what are you talking about? I'm going to judge people all the time. That's what we do, isn't it? We're trying to evaluate truths to get to the heart of a thing. So, and some people, you know, they see it in all sorts of ways. Sorry, Michael. Yeah, please.
Yes. And also one of my, when I speak to, I don't know, naturalists, white naturalists, and here in Sweden, national socialists, maybe, they forget what Hitler, what they national socialists were. They were Christians. And how many Christians are there on national socialists in Sweden? Well, barely none. There may be someone, but few. So they missed the whole point, and that tells me this has been usurped. And also, as you say, this misconception about Jesus, Yeshua, being a Jew, well, no, he was not. If you just look up the word and see the Iodians, he was not a Jew. He wasn't Judahite. And this is, I have had, Chip, exactly the same discussion as you had with people about those words. I show them in the book. I show them the concordance. Don't use the word Jew. It is inappropriate. You should use Judahite. You should use the correct word, but they only want to hear what they want to hear. Or another one I thought about when you said it. I mean, we men and women, God has given us two ears and one mouth. What does that tell us? Well, we should listen double the much what we speak. But I guess the opposite is true when we hit people. They want to hear their own voices. They want to be correct all the time. They are full of themselves. They have an ego that is gigantic, and that is something I've learned in this, is keeping away from people with a big ego, because they have their own agenda, they have their own into this. So I think we all have been into this kind of, as you alluded to, Chip.
Paul, I want to recognize that you don't censor the different shows that are on your channel. And
well, we don't even know. It's not, just so that you're clear, it's not my channel. Right. Okay. And no one can pre-vet or listen to anything in that quantity. And even if they could, what difference would it make? I think the idea is to try and find people that are communicating, rowing roughly in the same direction. I can't think of a better remit right now. If someone comes up with one, get in charge. No one's stopping anybody from doing things. It's just that people need to hear things from all these different points of view. What is good is that you know that people are concerned. This is really, really important. People are concerned. Now, how we sort of transform that concern into something more effective is the big challenge. We're stiff-necked people, remember? It's like herding cats with us lot. It's really difficult. It really, really is. It's not easy.
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah. You know.
They run all the direction without coming home. It's like herding cats. It's impossible.
It is. No, I know better than you. No, all right, okay, whatever. See you in 5 years' time when you've hit a brick wall and you come back bouncing back here. That's one of the things I said to Eli very early on when I first met him. I felt the image I threw up was, I said, I kind of feel, I didn't know all the details then, but I just absolutely knew in my heart that this was absolutely right on the target. I said, it's as if we're stood at the end of a valley and we see all these other inquirers of truth. They're running around down the other end of the valley. They're going down that little channel. Then they come back in. We see them running across. And we just sat here. I'm looking at my stopwatch going, we're just sat here waiting for them to get here because all roads of truth are going to lead here for our people because they can't lead anywhere else, can they? That's the way it appears to me.
And that is what that is. I guess that is what all those psyops are trying to do. They try to get you away from the Bible. They want to get you away from it. They also want to shield for the Jews. So that is also a way to find out the charlatans that are out there, because there are many charlatans. And I guess the Swedish people is not used to this. They believe everybody is good-hearted. No, they are not. There are a lot of charlatans everywhere. Those controlled oppositions. That is foretold in 1984.
Absolutely. Hey, there we go. There's the sound out music. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Chip. Thanks, Icon. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, listeners, for joining us today. It's wonderful. Eli should be back next week. Coming up next on Speak Free Radio, Dave Gahary with David Duke. Call-in show if you're on for that kind of thing. Have a cracking rest of your weekend. We'll see you all very soon. Bye for now.
Beep.